Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to Millennial Love, a podcast from The Independent on everything to do with love, sexuality, identity and more. This week I am so excited to be joined by intimacy coordinator Ita O'Brien. Ita is one of the leading people in this field in the UK, having worked on shows such as Sex Education, I May Destroy You and Normal People. It's her job to develop the best practice for working on sex and intimate scenes on screen, and I cannot wait to find out a little bit more about what she does and why it's so important and what the industry was like before without the role of intimacy coordinators, which is still fairly new. So let's get into it. Hello Ita, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm so excited to find out more about what it is that you do. I know I gave a brief introduction there, but can you just explain a bit more about what your role is and how it works?
So the role of the intimacy coordinator is a practitioner that just basically brings a professional process to the intimate content, just like a choreographer would do if you're going to choreograph a waltz or a tango, or a stunt coordinator would if you're going to do a stunt or a big fight. We're putting in place exactly the same. So we're serving the producers, putting in place best practice across the whole of a production. We're serving the director's vision. We're listening to the actors. The fundamental tenets are open communication and transparency, and then putting in place agreement and consent from all involved, and then clear choreography, that recognition that just like a stunt or just like a dance, it is a body dance. Mm. You've got two people moving together with touch. It is a body dance. And actually you need a practitioner who has body skills, who has that understanding of choreography and rhythm to be able to choreograph really clearly. And it means that you can serve every detail that the director wants. You're honouring the actor's requirements and then allowing with that clear choreography, the actor to bring all of their skills as an actor to this character in this moment, in this beautiful scene of intimacy, serves the director's vision. And let's everybody create the best work.
So what really blows my mind is how new this all is and how rare it is in this industry for someone like you to actually think, actually, hang on, we are filming a really intimate scene here, potentially a very triggering scene here. Who's making sure that these actors feel safe and are okay and feel comfortable? So I know that you started developing this in 2014, but it wasn't until 2018, am I right, that you were actually on set working with other actors. So what was it that kind of prompted you to start developing these guidelines? Was it that you had seen so many incidents of actors feeling uncomfortable?
No, it was all down to a marvellous lady called Meredith Dufton, who at that time was the head of movement at Mountview, one of the major drama schools in London. And, we have been in conversation, over the years, and I was telling her about the work that I was doing. And she said, please, will you come and start teaching the processes that you're developing in your R&D, in your research and development, because I've suddenly got all these plays that all of my second years and third years all have plays that have intimate content. As a head of movement, I have to go and support them and note that content. And if it's not telling the right storytelling, help them to create the intimate content that does tell the right storytelling. And she said, then there was no process by which to do it professionally. So she said, please, would you come in and start teaching what you're developing? And then also one of my movement teachers, a lady called Vanessa Ewan, who's one of the senior lecturers in movement at Central. She had already had the inspiration from watching a fight rehearsal and seeing the time and the space that was given to creating a fight and going, that's the principles that we need for intimacy. So I was looking at how to hold a safe space, what practices and principles to allow my practitioners to be present, centered and grounded in themselves, with each other in the space, that sense of checking in always so that, someone's really present and conscious as they go into the work. And then at the end of the day, again, rechecking in, being present and conscious and stepping away from the work really in a healthy way. Mm. And then Vanessa's inspiration, particularly the core of, you know, how you choreograph a fight scene, yeah. You know, slowly tai chiing it, really slowly speaking it so that, you know, parry, parry, thrust, thrust.
It's really frustrating to hear that because you think fight scenes must have been choreographed in film and TV for years. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly, I mean, it annoys me that sex scenes haven't been viewed in the same way when, if anything, it's more important because no one's actually necessarily being physically violent, but emotionally and psychologically, the stakes are a lot higher. So why do you think it did take so long for sex scenes to be considered in that way when fight scenes and all those other kind of things had been considered like that for years?
So I've got a few reflections as the works develop. So first of all, people are embarrassed to talk about sex.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the bottom line, first of all. So considering the intimate content in a script and a play and then talking about it openly, when there wasn't a professional process by which to journey that consideration artistically through to performance wasn't there. So people were embarrassed and directors were embarrassed as much as anybody else. And then that aspect of it's clear that people don't know how to do a waltz or a tango. So of course you need a choreographer to come in and teach those steps and then choreograph it. It's clear that if you want to fight, you know, with someone's sword or a fisticuffs, people don't know how to do the techniques to make it, you know, look, you know, stage combat techniques of making it look real, but it's pretend so that nobody actually gets physically hurt. So of course you're going to bring in a practitioner. And of course the intention is with your stunt coordinator or your choreographer that you're going to either create a brilliant dance or create a brilliant fight. And inherent within that is teaching techniques that brings in safety, or with a stunt coordinator, you're going to bring in, you know, crash mats, you know, so if you do a fall, it's all safe. But the focus is on a professional process, a professional practitioner that has those skills to give you those end results that you want. For me, so we've, you know, given that people are afraid to talk about intimate content, so it became the elephant in the room that nobody would talk about. And then the next thing is that it's clear that a director doesn't necessarily have the skills, you know, to be able to know how to do that themselves, to choreograph a fight or a dance. Of course they need that practitioner. But the sense is that we are all sexual beings. Mm. So we all have sex. So therefore, why do you need a practitioner? And that's, you know, again, where the intimate contents fell between, you know, sort of those kind of processes. And my awareness is that actually it is a body dance as much as a tango. And then also the idea of the risk assessment. So, of course, you're taking care in a risk assessment of a fight or a dance. So someone might twist their ankle, or if they're going to jump over, you know, from one roof to another, that they might fall and, you know, get seriously injured. The thing is with intimate content is the injury can be physical, but actually more likely than not, if someone's being manhandled or is, you know, sort of asked to be naked beyond their boundaries, that injury that someone's feeling, that they'll, you know, go away imploding, is not just physical, but emotional and psychological. Mm. And for me, that's where, you know, a producer, of course, is going to mitigate against possible being sued if someone physically injures themselves. And while for years and years and years, so many actors would speak about how uncomfortable or awkward or feeling downright abused it was to perform the intimate content. But until finally that tipping point of the ladies coming forward around the Weinstein allegations and finally it being taken seriously, finally, as Oprah Winfrey said, you are being listened to and heard. Mm-hmm. And then therefore the fallout, the injury was taken seriously. It was until that was really taken on board by producers. And therefore someone could possibly say, you know, I've experienced this, you know, bad behaviour, and now there's a fault to be answered, mm-hmm. that the industry then really changed.
I mean, it's interesting because I think there's been such widely expressed gratitude for what it is that you do. I mean, it was Michaela Cole, wasn't it, who thanked you in her speech for the BAFTAs. And I can imagine you hear a lot of horror stories from people expressing their gratitude to you, telling you thank you so much because this is what I've been through before, this is what it was like before. For those of us outside the industry, you know, we have no real sense of what it was like before, but I can imagine, knowing, you know, the stories that we know from Me Too, that there was a lot of exploitation and probably abuse going on when they were filming these sex scenes without any sort of supervision. Can you give us an idea of what sort of things were happening that now hopefully are not happening thanks to the role of people like you?
Well, this is it. So first of all, yes, of course, there have been people who have taken the opportunity of the intimate content to be abusive or predatory. But actually, a lot of bad practice was just done from people, you know, like I say, not having a professional process and just in that void of just not mentioning it. So, you know, so very often if an actor's doing an intimate scene, they'd come on the day, they'd be saying to their wardrobe department, oh, it's the intimate scene today. Nobody's spoken about to them about it. Perhaps that's the first time that they'll see the gamut of intimacy garments that they could possibly wear. You know, the modesty garments that they could wear, and they come on set and the director will go, okay, this is what this scene is, this is what we need, okay. And either one or two things would happen. Either you two now, you go away and work it out for yourselves, or say, great, this is what we want. There you go, up in front of the camera, go for it. And in both of those situations, it's clear, isn't it, that the actors invariably are wanting to say yes, are wanting to give the best of themselves, are wanting to serve and please the director. But you've got this halfway house that they're concerned for themselves, they're concerned for the other person. You know, where am I going to be touched? Where is it okay for me to touch this other person? How are we actually going to do this? You know, and in that place, that's where you've got, you know, decades and decades of uncomfortable intimate content. The other thing that was inherent in the industry was this idea that if you want actors to look like they've got chemistry, if you've got actors to look like they really fancy each other, it has to be real, wasn't it? They've got have chemistry.
Yeah.
And you have the, you know, the comments like, oh, we've got the sex scene tomorrow, you two better go out and have dinner today together.
Did people really do
really,
that?
Really, really seriously.
Wow.
Absolutely. Or, yeah, and so this confusion between who somebody is personally and then who somebody is professionally in this character, serving this character's relationship within this particular story. And even when I started sharing the work, you know, it was this thing, but if they've got to look like they really fancy each other, then, you know, how can that be rehearsed? And it was this incredible thing of going, you know, this isn't someone's real life. This is this character. And it's these two characters. And when someone's a good actor, they're going to step into that character. And it's this character storyline that they're going to tell. It's this character's intimate expression that they're going to tell, not their own. And of course, that's where there was such confusion. And while I'm not saying that, you know, if you bring in an intimacy coordinator, it means that there will never be, you know, a company romance or whatever. But it does, it really does help the actor to separate out who they are and what they really feel from who this character is and what this character really feels, and trusting your actors to bring all of their skills to act this beautiful chemistry.
It's so tricky, isn't it? Because it's like, it sounds like before it was almost predicated on having no boundaries, like you said, and blurring the personal and the professional. And not only is that insulting to the actors in terms of their ability to actually perform, but it's also, it puts these people in a very strange position. But then on the other side of the coin, you do have all of these instances where actors do hook up on set.
Yeah.
So it's a very strange thing. But I think obviously in the first instance, professionalism should be the by the book thing that everyone is striving towards, obviously.
And this is it, you know, to be able to continue with the intimate content that you have your director there and the directors, you know, you're serving the director's beats. And then in order to do that, then it's choreographed really clearly, you know, sort of. And that's where, you know, when you have really good writing. So Sex Education, I remember the scene, choreographing the scene in season two with the Ola and Otis, when you had the, you know, the clock masturbation moment.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was a brilliantly written scene. And you've got all these different beats. I think there was at least 16 beats in that scene. And you know, spoke to the director, choreographed it really clearly. And then we got it up in front of camera, then going through it again. And that's where then, see, that's what's so lovely is that the bare bones of the structure of the scene and making sure we agree touch. And then we had the choreography, we had to do the, you know, 6, 12, you know, what was it? So 12, 3, 6, 9, yeah. So we had all these gays going. But then each actor can bring their artistry. So, you know, then, you know, Asa Butterfield then really bringing Otis to the performance of it, and, you know, the way he sort of walked the fingers down that he hadn't necessarily done in rehearsals. Because, again, when you've got clear choreography, then there's space within that then for the actor to play, and space within that for the director to note it and go, oh, okay, so perhaps up the humour or up your uncomfortableness. And in that scene, we choreographed all of it. And then there was an extra beat where, you know, a particular reaction goes, oh, no, we don't need that. That's one beat too many. Can take that out. So that's what you could do, you know, when you've choreographed it really clearly.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So let's talk about the nature of your actual work. When you take on a project, what's the first thing you do? Do you have a sit down with every actor involved? Do you kind of, do you have that chat with what they are and are not comfortable with? Do you talk to people together? And then how does it work in terms of the choreography and you know, the rehearsals before filming a sex scene?
So the shift is that what we're putting in place is just a professional process. Yes. And then, you know, and that's where people say to me sometimes, you're there to keep everybody safe, right? And it's like, no, you wouldn't say to a stunt coordinator or to a choreographer, you're there just to keep people safe. No, you're there to bring your artistry mm-hmm. and to focus on serving the director's vision and create the best fight, the best dance, yes? And for me, it's exactly the same. So just really opening out and going, I'm just bringing a bog standard professional and open actor-director process to the intimate content, just like you would anything else. So it's asking the director, first of all, to think about the intimate content earlier than they might have done, so that they can consider it. And so on a production, invariably, perhaps I'll speak to the producer first, because I'm fundamentally employed by them. I'll be sent a script, I'll identify the intimate scenes, and then I'll talk to the director. You know, especially in early days, it was a concern that the director would feel that is this new role going to come in and take over? Or does it show a lack of trust of myself with my actors? And of course, I'm going, no, absolutely not. You wouldn't say that because you're bringing in a stunt coordinator, it means suddenly the actors don't trust you. It's like, no, you know, that person's bringing in skills. Mm-hmm. So it's the same here. So first off, listening to the director, what do you want for this scene? What's your image about it? What's your camera angles that you've thought about? Have you got a storyboard? Always, you know, that drawing out of a storyboard, brilliant. Invariably, you know, by the time you get to the intimate content, that frisson that comes to touch, it's a body dance. So again, we want, you know, it's a visual thing, it's a physical thing. So if you can do storyboards, great. So once you've checked out with the director, then you're checking out with the actors. Or I always say to the director, you speak to the actors first. So everybody knows that the vision's coming from the director. Once that's signed off, I'll speak with the actors going, great, you know what the director wants. What are your requirements regarding nudity, about where you're comfortable to be touched, about around what you're happy to perform simulated sexual content wise. Sometimes that means I'll share that back with the director, go, okay, so you want a moment where the dress just opens and drops and you want the full back nakedness. So this actor is happy to have naked back down to the small of her back. She's happy for you to film from the mid thigh down. So let's look at how we're going to choreograph that, so you get the inference of, you know, that here and just dropping. Perhaps you open and it drops, so the camera's to the small of the back, and then perhaps it goes to a close-up of the man who's observing this, and then come back to seeing the dress dropping to the floor. There's so many ways, you know, that you can tell the same physical story, the same intimate story, the same degree of nakedness, that an audience will get the storytelling, but doing it in ways that will honour and serve the actor's requirements. So that's part of the process. Going to wardrobe, checking with wardrobe. Again, a big part of intimate content is then the modesty garments. So the actor is always as covered as possible. Checking in with makeup if that's needed. Perhaps it's a period piece. They want a sense of nudity, but someone's got a whole load of very modern tattoos over them. So we'll check in with them. Checking in with the first AD to make sure, or co-work with the first AD, to make sure that a closed set is running really well and really respectfully. So that's all the check-ins. And that's the open communication, transparency. And I always say to people say to me, so how does it go the day on set? And I say, the day on set is now the tip of the iceberg. when you've done all of that work, that's where then the day on set can run smoothly.
And will you have physical rehearsals with actors for a sex scene?
That's the other thing that was a biggie in the industry when I started saying, okay, we need time to rehearse this intimate scene. And I would have like the first AD going to me, we can never make time to rehearse a sex scene. While on that very call sheet, on that very day, you've got actors finished their scene and stunt rehearsal. You know, so again, it was early days. It was flipping people's minds to going, of course you're going to rehearse a stunt scene because of course you know that you want it all choreographed so you can be efficient and quick. So when you get up on set, you know, everybody knows what they're doing.
Yeah, it's so interesting what you said about it coming from people feeling embarrassed about sex, because I think it's obviously that, and it's also just this degree of shame that people have attached to sex and sexuality. And it's unbelievable to think that that's impacting people's safety at work, which is obviously what it is in this context. And, you know, it's so brilliant that we have the system in place now and the guidelines that you have issued that are now being used widely across the industry, aren't they? Tell me a bit more about the kind of the nitty gritty of it, because I'm really interested by the modesty garments. What do those actually look like? And also the different like props that people might use in a sex scene to simulate sex and intimacy. Like I know that Jonathan Bailey and Bridgerton spoke about using a deflated netball and those kind of things.
Where to start? Okay, so let's start rehearsals. So invariably in rehearsals, we want to definitely, you know, keep everybody feeling really comfortable and really safe. So so that's one technique, is have a deflated balloon or deflated sort of yoga ball or something like that. I haven't actually used that particular technique. Each intimacy coordinator is developing their own ways. I sort of started working with perhaps flesh colored pair of pants, and then I bought some lamb's wool and stuffed it with lamb's wool and sewed it up. So basically creating genitalia cushions.
Right.
So you can put them between people. And then gradually develop different shapes depending on the intimate content. So I've got one if someone's sitting having sex sat astride someone. So we've got one that's sat astride that people have started calling the banana. So I've got a whole gamut of different cushions, which I now bring along. And then so also sort of very often to put those cushions, particularly if the camera's doing shooting from upper body up, but you've got that sense of intercourse, then the actors can put the cushions sort of, you know, perhaps they'll wear flesh-coloured shorts and then they'll put the big cushions inside that, so that gives you an extra layer. And so they can really, bring each other's bodies in towards each other, have that really close contact, but they're really, you know, protected and their actual bodies aren't touching. That can allow an actor to feel a lot more comfortable and lend that journey of rhythm go through the two bodies. But, and also sort of as a movement practitioner, so if you're under the covers or if you've got clothes on, so another one those kind of techniques are good for is like period pieces where you've got the big skirts. Again, you can very clearly have your flesh coloured shorts and your big cushions in there. But if there's, they're above the sheets and there's a degree of nakedness, then obviously those cushions are going to be seen. So then we bring in techniques of looking at anchoring. So I'm looking at sort of anchoring sort of side of thighs into thighs and having the energy moving in there. So really pulling thigh into hip or thigh into thigh. So that a rhythm will journey through both bodies so that they have a rhythm together. And so it reads from the side of the camera. But if you brought your camera around the other side, you could see that the genitalia are, nowhere near each other.
Right.
Okay. So just as you would do, it's just the same kind of thing with a punch, at the right camera angle, the punch, looks like it's landing. And of course, it's all sold on the person who's receiving the punch. But
because it's so interesting, because like you said, you would never, because when you watch these sex scenes on screen, particularly the ones in Normal People that I know you worked on, you can't imagine how they're doing that and not actually touching each other. And it's so interesting. How long does it take to film a sex scene, and how many times typically would an actor have to go over it again and again? Or is that just the same as any normal scene?
It is the same as any normal scene. So first of all, the other thing I want to add in that's really important is that very often when you're shooting a scene, the director will start with a wide shot first and then do the two shot and then do the close up. Mm. But actually what you want is for the actor to feel really comfortable. And if you start with your wide shot and it's this intimate scene where you want the infants that are both completely naked, it means that they're in the least amount of genitalia, modesty garments. So I always say, don't do that. Start with your two shot or your close up so they can have, you know, the as many of the modesty garments as on as you can. So we're always looking at sort of the least is, you know, for someone with the vagina is just a genitalia patch, which is basically like a G-string without the side. So it sticks above here.
Really? Oh, wow.
And sticks into the small of the back or between the buttocks. For those with the penis, we have the genitalia pouch and then the hebu over the top. So again, it's the same sort of thing. So the genitalia are held in and then the hebu holds it close to the body. And that's a brilliant technique because it allows the actor to move really freely. Mm-hmm. And then the next layer up is a flesh-coloured dance belt for the gentleman, flesh-coloured G-string, you know, for those with a vagina, and then flesh-coloured pants and then flesh-coloured shorts. I like flesh-coloured shorts, you know, because then if someone, you know, sort of is performing a sex scene and they've got sort of legs intertwined, then the flesh-coloured shorts are really great. Mm. And then, of course, if you don't want your nipples to be seen, you've got nipple daisies, which are nipple covers, and then flesh-coloured bras or bandana bras, flesh-coloured camisole tops. So we're always looking at having the actor as covered as possible. And then gradually, you know, as you pull out, then say, OK, you're happy now to take your, you know, camisole top off. And then only finally, you know, to come down to the least amount. And what that means is that by then, the rhythm of the scenes known, you know, they've done it loads of times. The director's been able to bring in loads of notes. They've been able to find their flow and their freedom within the choreography. And then by the time you get to the wide shot, you've got a really beautiful, stunning scene, as you can see in Normal People.
Yeah. And how much do you encourage the two actors involved to kind of have a conversation beforehand? Obviously not go out and get drunk together so that it looks like you fancy each other. But, you know, obviously to have those conversations, how much do you facilitate that before a scene? Like, is it part of your process to tell people, I want you two to spend some time together just to talk about what you are and are not comfortable with?
So for me, it is bringing the bog standard actor-director process, and it always comes from script.
Right.
So it's about, you know, the say the process on set is, or in a rehearsal, you start from reading the script, as you do with any scene, and then at that point, I'm just being present, and you're listening to the director saying what they want, the actors offering their thoughts, who these characters are, why that scene's there, what's it telling us about the moment. So you're facilitating all of this juicy, gorgeous, creative, professional conversation so that everybody's journeying through to gradually find the sort of shape of the scene from that conversation.
Now, how often does it happen? You can probably tell I'm going to ask you whether you're smiling. That one of the actors you're working with does take it a little bit too seriously and gets a little bit too excited on camera. And how do you deal with that? And yeah, what happens? Because I imagine the best thing to do is just say it's normal and this is part
That's right.
of what happens. But how often does that happen? I'm curious to know. And yes, tell me more about how you deal with that.
Bodily functions, isn't it?
Yeah.
Natural and normal. So those with wombs and vaginas, menstruation. Natural and normal part of our lives. So I open up that conversation. I say to producers, find out the menstrual cycle of your actors and actresses and try and schedule the intimate scenes when they're not menstruating.
Oh, wow, that's a really good idea.
It makes such a difference
if
you're, you know, full on. Can you imagine stomach cramps? And,
if
you're, particularly if you're in first or second day in a really heavy flow, having to navigate tampons, pads, just ups the ante.
Yeah.
So that's not good. And what was really lovely, I was on a production that I've set up, but as yet I haven't had a chance to be present, and I've just taken over as the intimacy coordinator, and I met with one of the actors, and she said that the producers had asked her what her menstrual cycle is.
And wow. Like,
so there's that aspect. And again, it's making it open and it's natural and normal. And yes, my little spiel is, you know, particularly if you've choreographed a full-on, you know, intercourse scene from kissing through to, you know, arousal, into penetration, into rhythm, to orgasm, it's natural and it's normal. Two bodies moving together to possibly become aroused. Mm. However, it's not suitable to have an erection in the workplace.
I love the way you said that. quite right. No, it is not.
So we put in place a timeout, and that's for any reason whatsoever, you know, so it's really important to put in place a timeout so the actors have the autonomy to halt the action for whatever reason, and that's in rehearsal and in performance, be it in front of camera and in theatre, but I can talk about that one in a minute. So you can put in, you can call time out for any reason. Your nipple daisy might be falling off, or you desperately need to go to the loo, or you've become aroused. And then actors say to me, oh, I'll be so embarrassed. I'm going, look, there's so many reasons that you can call a time out. You can feel if you're becoming aroused. You don't wait until it becomes obvious. Just call a time out. There's no questions asked. It's completely respected. We call a halt, we take a break, go and refresh and come back.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, tell me about the theatre now, because obviously that's a very different ballgame to filming, because you can't really stop and start as quickly and the stakes are almost high, even though I imagine in the theatre maybe it's easier because you're seeing people from further away, you don't have those close shots necessarily, so in terms of modesty garments maybe that's a little bit easier?
The difference is, or the different concerns with theatre, so whereas in filming, you know, you've got where's the camera going to be, in theatre, it's where are the sight lines, you know, what's going to be seen and who can be seen where. And very often in theatre, of course, you might abstract something, you might not perhaps do a full-on, you know, intimate scene, you might perhaps go into slow motion, or you might have people behind a screen and do it in silhouette, you know, so obviously in theatre there's different theatrical and artistic ways that you might depict an intimate scene, but it's still really important that you have the autonomy to halt the action, and this, you know, for me the journey of realising this and then gradually putting in place a time out for theatre has been a really interesting journey. The fact that you know, certainly when I was, you know, in my years of performance, I remember having a full-on flu when I was in sort of panto at the Dominion Theatre. It, you know, was horrendous, you know, flu-y sweat, you know, dosing myself up, and just you go on stage and you just perform because there's no question that you could miss the performance. That idea of Doctor Theatre and that sense of, as an actor, you would overstep your own boundaries because that's just what's been asked of you. You're shore up, put on, you know, get on with it. And you just do whatever's asked of you. And for me with this work, it's gradually flipping it and going, no, this is someone's workplace and it is someone's day of work. And we should be putting in place bog standard HR processes as we would do if we were in an office. So on stage, again, it's like, well, how do you put in place a timeout? So you know, and is it suitable to perhaps halt a performance because you're not feeling comfortable? So there are several ways that you can put in place a timeout. So one, you can have like a safe word that's just between you and your partner that you'd say under your breath that they know that you might mean that you just pause with the intimate content. Or you could just literally stand back so you're out of arm's reach, could continue the dialogue, you know, and it's obvious that something's happened that's not right. Or if it's really what's needed, you just walk off stage. There was a case in a performer in the Rocky Horror Show who was playing Frankenfurter, and there's a moment where there's an intimate scene with the character playing Janet, and there was choreographed you know, moment for this, but in the flow of the theatre performance, he did not abide to that choreography and actually touched her genital area.
Oh, wow.
And his defence was that he was in character, and that's what his character would do.
This is the thing, isn't it? Because this is what I imagine happened a lot on set, and actors would use that,
that's right,
as an excuse for predatory behaviour.
That's right, you know, and that, you know, actor endured it, and then, you know, it came to court. I'm saying to you know, an audience would far rather know that the actors have the autonomy to halt the action, rather than them knowing that they were actually in an audience and being party to witnessing an assault. Would you not agree?
Yeah.
Yes, if something's happening that is assaulting you or is beyond your boundaries, just, you know, if, you know, like I say, there's different things you can do, or you just walk off stage, go to the stage manager, halt the show, if you can, reset and then carry on, or curtain comes down. And again, you know, with this, with the opening out of these conversations and the understanding of Me Too and everything, I really do, you know, it is really interesting when I first say that, how do you put a time out in theatre? People are going, you can see the schism of like, well, those two things just don't equate, but actually they do. And again, if you know that you can, sort of be, be respected, be autonomous, again, an actor can be way freer.
Yeah, because I think what's also interesting about that is, yes, an actor would, an actor who was a perpetrator would legitimise it to themselves by thinking, oh, I was just in character. But then the victim of that assault would probably do the same and internalise it. And
that's
think,
right.
Because, I mean, you do that with sexual assault anyway, but particularly if you are filming something or performing something and someone does that to you, you would probably talk yourself out of speaking up about it because you would think, well, you know, they were just doing their part and, it's on me for not getting as into the role as they were. Like, that internal dialogue is so tricky, but also I can imagine why that happens. And how often did this kind of thing happen, do you think, before?
Oh, do you know what? Sadly, from all the workshops that I've done, I always start with asking people to speak about when it's been done well and when it hasn't been done well. And I promise you, nearly everybody has a story of it being awkward or harassing or abusive. And they have to say, I can't even think of a time that it's been done well.
God.
Yeah.
God, it's awful. And I mean, this brings me on to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, because you worked on one of my favourite shows, I May Destroy You, which I just thought was so brilliant.
Incredible, isn't it?
It was absolutely incredible. But one of those, so, it's one thing to coordinate a sex scene. It's another to coordinate a sexual assault. And in that kind of instance, the stakes are obviously incredibly high and people might get triggered by certain things. How do you handle something like that from a choreography point of view and from a safety point of view psychologically?
So, first of all, from pure choreography, when it's, a sexual assault, invariably you're looking at some degree of aggression. So I've done my stage combat, but I will co-work, with a stunt coordinator, and we'll put in place, really clear choreography that uses reverse energy. So, so if it's someone holding someone down with their arm, then we'll be looking at the person holding, we'll just create the frame, and the person who's being held will hold, they'll be the one that control, they'll be pushing into them, so they just create a resistance. So I've had this where, someone had to grab someone by the arm, so you're saying that you just here and you create the frame with your arms and you hold that, and this person that's being held that controls pushing into the arms. So but then when you get into the flow of the energy of the perpetrator and the victim, it's actually got that reverse psychology or that reverse energy, so that keeps everybody safe and keeps the person who's playing the victim in control of the energy. But that takes quite a bit more rehearsal. Yeah. So you really anchor. So just really, really anchoring in the choreography and slowing it down as you do with stage combat, in slow-mo, so that you walk it through again, walking it through, saying in words, I turn to face you, I put my hand on the back of your neck, I take your arm, I kneel onto the bed, I place you down onto the bed, so that it's slow motion, you're doing the physical choreography, saying in words, so that you're really connecting consciously what you're physically doing, with your presence. So you're doing that. And then just acknowledging that, sort of acknowledging then the emotional and psychological journey of it, invariably keeping it, the choreography, really clean without any emotion at all, so that then you say that the full-on quality of the perpetrator and the victim to the performance. And then, yes, whenever there's subject matters that are challenging, I will always say that I can facilitate and hold to a certain point, and I can perhaps recognise if someone is being activated or triggered, but I don't have those skills of a counsellor. So since 2015, I've co-worked with an artist wellbeing practitioner called Lou Platt, but there are more artist wellbeing practitioners now in the industry. And I will, say that sort of that she's part of my team, part of what I offer for me being a robust practitioner, to co-work with me and to offer that to a production. And and that if anybody is triggered or activated, that is the person that I will refer them on to, or find out if that production has got their own counsellor in place. Really important.
Yeah, really important, because you just think how psychologically challenging that must be to film a scene like that. Regardless of whether you're a sexual assault survivor or not, it would just be an incredibly difficult thing to go through.
That's right. And right from when I was doing my R&D research and development, I did two rounds of it, and in exploring the dynamic of the perpetrator and the victim. And I had the very first day, and we were just dealing with catcalling on the street. And the first day, we were all talking about when we've, you know, received a wolf whistle or had someone call out to us, and all of us were very comfortable in, you know, honing in on our different stories. And then, we got up and then found a physical score that depicted that. The following day, then I looked at when we were all perhaps the moment that we were the perpetrator who had taken or overstepped someone's boundaries, and wow, that was the tricky day. Yeah, and so it's right from then that I realised, wow, for a performer to step into that place, to investigate themselves or to open up a place in themselves that they can draw on in order to play the perpetrator, takes as much, if not more, care than the person playing the victim.
It's so interesting because I think all of this work that you're doing is not only obviously improving the actor's safety and you know, how comfortable everyone is on set, but I think it's also informing the work and the writing that we're getting, because we are getting so much more nuanced portrayals of sex and relationships on screen, but also of sexual assault, because I know, you know, previously there's been so many really damaging portrayals of rape on screen that are very much the stereotypical stranger being dragged into an alley, which is, you know, like 1% of cases. And I think we are getting to a place where what we're seeing on screen is actually being really helpful and really beneficial and really educational.
I have been completely bowled over, you know, in those 2018, 2019, just head down, you know, trying to put in place this process. it really was baptism of fire, and, you know, sort of trying to put in place the process, knowing how to talk to a producer or the director, when, how to put in place rehearsals, you know, the different language to that supports the producer, to that the director wants to hear, to that of the actor and the crew as well. This is the crew's workplace. So from that just bog standard head down, just putting in place the process, opening it out to being professional, choreographing it really clearly. Then as those productions started to go out, and then the impact of that. So for example, the incredible positive impact of Normal People, and particularly episode top of episode 2, where it's, the character of Marianne opening up to her sexual awakening, but being able to ask for protection, to ask for consent, for consent to being offered, and to being offered in a beautiful way that stayed with the juiciness of the loving, you know, but the, you know, that dialogue and that continuous consent being offered and invited. And then the impact that that's had, you know, so I've had secondary schools and, you know, contacted me saying, we are now using that scene as part of our sex education in school. I know, this is it. And then people like from I May Destroy You, people from the queer male black community contacting me saying, thank you for being seen and heard. People from the queer community, queer lesbian community, with Gentleman Jack saying, thank you at last. Other than the fact that Saran James' nails were too long, you know, input content that really told our story. So I was bowled over by that, and then realising the responsibility and then the possibility of that, you know, that actually we can go further with that. We can go further with getting the detail right and inviting more detail. So there's been a script in recently where one of the main characters is a trans character, and one of the first big sex scenes within the episode that I've read is this amazing, beautiful, full-on sex scene with someone from the trans community. So important. And again, let's get this detail right so that, you know, we're helping, you know, our humanity and our audiences out there to really see themselves and feel validated and respected.
But this is, again, it just makes me think, why is it taking so long for this to exist? That stuff is so important. That could have a lasting impact on that person. Yeah. It's so, so vital. I'm so pleased that it does exist now. But do you think it's because of Me Too that now this has become a mainstream, is becoming more and more mainstream on sets? Do you think if it wasn't for Me Too, we wouldn't quite be there yet?
Yes. So fundamentally, when I started sharing this work, you know, that the basic narrative that I was offering, which was sort of a flip to the received, you know, narrative around intimate scenes, which was, you're an actor. You know that sex and nudity and intimate content is part of your job. So if you're an actor, that's what you should, you know, expect to do. And then that sense of, as an actor, if you ever said no, you were considered a troublemaker, or a diva, And you certainly would be concerned that if you kicked up that kind of fuss or called your boundaries in any way, that that you'd lose your job. And that was the case. And that sense of, you know, sort of, that, well, just because the structure wasn't there to be professional.
Mm.
And as I started developing the work and sharing it with the students in drama school, you know, and they would say to me, how can I, straight out of drama school, be, you know, having these conversations? And I was saying, you flip the narrative.
Mm.
You know, it's saying I, as an artist, want to give you, as a director, the best of my skills, the best of my intimate content, serving the storytelling. Mm. And the way that I can do that is by working professionally through a professional process, such as the intimacy onset guidelines.
Mm.
And so you're offering, you're having an artistic conversation with your director. And if you can hear that your director has no process and no safe rehearsal structure, or indeed any intention to rehearse at all, then you're offering the director a solution and offering them the best of yourself, not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the beginning of it, sort of beginning to flip the dynamic and helping the you know, sort of the actor to give, you know, an empowered conversation rather than feeling you're going along with going, oh, I don't want to be naked, you know, sort of it's turning upside down. And actually, you know, and that's why also I've changed the word to, rather than setting my boundaries, it's like, what are your requirements?
Mm.
What are your requirements regarding your nakedness, your simulated sexual content, and where you're comfortable to be touched? Yes, what do you require? And then we will honour your requirements. And then if and then we can work creatively, you know, working with camera angles, working with choreography to tell the same physical storytelling, but using, you know, perhaps different camera angles, different choreography, that serves the director's vision, serves your requirements, and still creates intimate content that's needed.
I mean, quite frankly, we should be having those conversations when we're not acting as well about what are you not okay with. God, I could talk to you for hours, but it's time for our Lessons in Love segment. So this is the part of the show where I ask every guest to share something that they've learned about relationships. But I think from you, I'd love to hear about what you have learned in your role, just about intimacy in general. And I guess to my point earlier about how we can carry the things that you do in your job into our real sex lives.
Especially as a menopausal woman, sort of just that question of our intimacy and our journey through, you know, to that intimate content and making time and space for it. And that also sort of came in really around lockdown with COVID, when suddenly our home space was everything, wasn't it? It was our place where we were intimate, the place where we, you know, sort of try to engage with our kids, the place where we were working. And so for me, you know, that's been the fundamental journey of just as we're asking, you know, to make time and space to consider this, to give it time and space, you know, to consider it, to talk about it, rehearse it. So not that you're necessarily going to rehearse, but just putting in place a structure of boundaries. Mm-hmm. And then that was the thing with the council as well, is sort of like, intimacy doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, it has to get physical. Intimacy is actually in allowing yourself to push everything else aside and giving yourself time and space to be present, you know, with your loved ones. And for me also, that's not just with my life partner, but also with my kids, you know, sort of like my daughter would say to me, sort of, you're here, but you're not here. Because you're now allowed your work to just leak into everything, you know. So again, creating boundaries during those lockdown periods where you go, okay, this is my time of work, and now let's put that aside and actually, you know, honour that boundary of spending time, say, with my daughter going down the bottom of the garden, having a cup of tea with her, or spending time. So, and for me, that's a biggie, is actually understanding that putting boundaries in place is actually honouring myself and honouring the people that you love.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, thank you so much, Ita. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you so much for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of Millennial Love, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts. You can also now watch us too, if you would rather do that. We are on The Independent TV on the website. And please do subscribe and like and share and do all of those things so that more people can find us. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.